Oh, hey, Bumholios. Time for another episode of Kitsch Cat Chat. Still working on whatever I want the theme song to be. I don't know. Do any of my 10 listeners care? Do you really care if I go, it's Kitsch Cat Chat, time to listen to Kitsch Cat Chat? Well, there. I did it anyway, I guess. So it's a super rainy day here in Salt Lake, which is kind of weird because we live in a desert region and duh, it rains here, but like not very often. So it's weird. And it's been raining all weekend. In fact, here, I'm gonna let you hear some of this beautiful rain. Oh, how is that just not friggin' heavenly? I mean, it's an actual like survival trait. I'm sure most of you have heard this. Like our brains, our chemistry, the DNA in us is trained to smell rain. And then we know like, oh, we're not going to die today. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I was going to be a biology major. And then I realized I'm really, really bad at testing and memorizing facts about biology. So I went, I know what to do. I'm going to be an art major at a tiny liberal arts college that overcharges for everything and tricks you into getting really expensive loans and is a great experience and gives you some of the best friends you'll ever have. But for years, you'll regret in a lot of ways that you did it because arts, oh, who cares? Okay. Did you hear? I was like, and then I was like, ugh, I'm too exhausted. That's where I'm at. In fact, I don't know. Maybe I'll title this, I'm too exhausted, but probably not. I'm going to probably have to mention something about the topic today, which is, of course, Black Lives Matter. Just going to say it again. Black Lives Matter. Maybe if we say it often enough, like any really good, what are they freaking called? Affirmation. Maybe if we just say it enough, we'll start believing it. I don't know. Maybe Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. I'm just going to keep going. Black Lives Matter. 2 hours. You ready? Here we go. Black Lives Matter. Black. Okay. Black Lives do matter, but I am kidding because, I mean, I probably already lost like half of you. I hope I haven't. If I have, oof, yikes. That's a problem. But that is kind of the main thing I want to talk about today is what's going on, you know, in our world. And that is the whole Black Lives Matter stuff. It freaking matters. And it deserves being talked about. I really debated, though, what I was going to really talk about, like the detailed kind of part of this episode this week or this time. I shouldn't say week because God knows it's not going to be weekly. I'm too inconsistent for that. But I just really debated, what am I going to talk about? I think that most of us have heard enough from white women. I don't mean to say that my voice doesn't matter. That's not what I mean. I just mean, I'm perfectly comfortable stepping aside and being like, you know what, let's let a black person speak, because I think that matters a little bit more right now. It's kind of just the same as when I say Black Lives Matter. It doesn't mean that I'm like, Black Lives Matter only Black Lives Matter. No, that's not what that means. It doesn't mean Black Lives Matter, therefore I don't matter. That's not what it means. I'm allowed to say Black Lives Matter and still know that I matter. Just because I'm not black doesn't mean I don't matter. That's not what that phrase means. And in this moment where I'm saying, I think that we need to listen to more black people speak right now, people of color, that doesn't mean that people who aren't black don't get to speak and that their voices don't matter. That's not what it means. I have plenty of things to offer this world, and I know that, and I know my worth. But right now, I think it's important for us to listen to the voices of black people. I'm going to give you one recommendation in that spirit. Oh, jeez, my mom just tried to call me and I didn't answer. Now she's going to think it's because I called her a racist on Facebook. No, my phone was just on silence. I should probably call her. I don't want to. But guess what? That's where we're at. We need to have these difficult conversations where we fight with our moms who we don't really like. Sorry, mom. Just kidding. I love you. We need to fight with them about stuff like this. Okay, so here's my recommendation. I'm currently listening to it and so far, amazing. It's called Throughline. Throughugh, in case you don't know how to spell through correctly, line, line. It's an NPR podcast, and the episode is American Police. It's only an hour, and there are some of those like blips that are sort of ads for other NPR things. You could just skip through those, and that'll probably make it less than an hour. I think we all can spare less than an hour to listen to something. You're listening to me right now. That tells me you probably have time to go listen to this episode. Please do. I think it's really enlightening. I don't think it's like bashing white people. I think it's informational. It's a really interesting historical perspective on the American police system. And I think everyone should really go and give it a listen. That's my recommendation. I will try and come up with other recommendations, but here we go. Now I'm questioning the whole thing, like, oh, should I call my mom? But I really want to do my podcast right now, so I'll call my mom later. It's fine. Yes. Well, so this week I was talking to my friend. She is a person of color. She identifies as biracial because she is half black and half white. And she and I had some discussions about some of these issues. And I tried to listen to her, but she's one of my best friends. So I spoke over her a lot because that's my fault, you know, I'm one of my faults. I speak over people. If you're listening to this, you probably know me and you know that I have raging ADHD and I tend to interrupt. And it's something I've been working on really hard and I've improved greatly, but I still am at fault. That's something I still can improve. And, you know, I really think that's the whole freaking message here with Black Lives Matter. It's not that white lives don't matter. It's not that other lives don't matter. It's that Black Lives Matter and we need to have a conversation about it. And we all have room for improvement. I mean, there are some people out there that are obviously racist. Donald Trump is a freaking racist. If you do not believe the statement I just said and you're like, tell me about the proof, go ahead and message me, put a question out there, Google it. I think it's pretty easy to find a lot of examples of why I would say Donald Trump is a racist. He's the kind of person where I'm like, I'm sorry, I have very little hope. I'd be pretty chill, pretty cool if Corona got you and you died, because then we could just have a fresh slate and maybe your kids could learn to be a little less racist. I don't know if his kids are racist. I'm just assuming if their dad is Donald Trump, that he's told them some racist things and they're kids and they don't know better yet. And they haven't had good enough examples in their lives to teach them otherwise. I have hope for his kids. I do not have hope for him. What I'm saying here is I think there are some people that we can just say they're a racist. If you're a member of the KKK, you're a racist. If you think that your life and your comfort matters more than the lives of people who are not white, you're racist. But I think that most of us are kind of in this category of saying racist things, doing racist things, having good intent, but failing. And so I don't know, maybe we're not full-blown racist, if that makes you feel uncomfortable to hear. Like if I said you're a racist and that would make you feel bad, there you go. You're not a racist. You just say and do a lot of racist things, hopefully accidentally. I feel pretty comfortable saying that I'm racist. I'm not proud of that and I want to change it, but I know that I have said and done racist things and that I continue to do and say racist things because there are so many things that have been brought up in my life that have been said to me, that have been taught to me that are racist, and I don't even know. My awareness has not reached those areas yet, and that's okay. I don't think I'm a bad person. I think I'm a person, and because I'm a person, I have room to grow. I think it's ridiculous that there's all these people out here that are all about like growing and changing, and or like religious people who are like, well, you need to work on becoming perfect like the Savior. But then they're like, oh, but not on racism. I mean, I need to fight with my sister less, but I'm not a racist. How dare you? Why are we so comfortable being told that we are not perfect? But if you point out one thing that might not be perfect about you, meaning you say and do racist things unintentionally or intentionally, I think that's true. Why are we so uncomfortable with that version of being imperfect? Do you know what I mean? Like, we're imperfect, we're humans, we're fallible. We are going to say and do stupid and offensive things throughout the rest of our lives because we're human beings. No one's going to be perfect. No one. So, like, acknowledge our imperfection, acknowledge we need to work on it, and that includes race. I just, oof. Okay. So, I was talking to my friend, and she and I discussed that she wanted to come on here and talk it out with me. And I was really excited, but she's tired. And I do not fault her. I am not angry. I am like, yes, please rest. She has been inundated with messages in the last week or two of all of her white friends saying, but what about this? Please educate me. And I think that's well-meaning, but I also think that it's putting her in a position where she's just freaking exhausted. She is a warrior and she has been responding and she has been trying her best. My cats are fighting, meowing in the background, and I can hear his little bell, and it's very distracting. So sorry if you hear that. But anyways, I cannot fault my friend for needing a break. And hopefully one day we can have that conversation, but it's going to be completely up to her. We do not get to, and that means me, white people, black people, anyone, people in general, we don't get to tell other people when to be tired or not tired. We don't get to tell other people when they should have a conversation and when they shouldn't. I don't know. That being said, we all need to have a conversation about race right now. So both things are true. We don't get to tell our friends if they, especially our black friends, we don't get to tell them, you know, oh, you can't be tired. You need to talk about these things. But I'm also going to tell all of you people out there that we need to not be tired and we need to talk about this. I think the big difference there is that person has been talking about race and defending her own existence and life to people her entire life. She was born into it. And she has countless stories of people treating her differently because of her race. I, on the other hand, have had very little interactions, or I can't think of one situation where someone treated me poorly because I was white. I can't. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that you out there listeners, I'm not saying people don't have bad experiences because they're white. I'm sure they exist. Just like there are stories about black people or white people who are innocent, who are attacked by cops. Just like there's stories about good cops out there. You're always going to find the exception. You know, go ahead and watch He's Just Not That Into You and you'll know what I'm talking about. But I think for myself, I can say, yeah, no, I've not been treated poorly because I was white. I cannot recall a situation. I'd have no trauma related to that. I have plenty of trauma, but none of it's related to that. I've had plenty of difficult experiences in my life, but none of it has been related to my skin color. I've had horrible things happen. I have had struggles. I have been underprivileged. I have experienced prejudice because of my weight and because of a lot of other things, but not ever because of my skin color. And first of all, that's white privilege right there. There's many kinds of privilege. I just happen to have white privilege. I don't have some other kinds of privilege, but I do have white privilege. And I'm perfectly comfortable talking about that because guess what? I'm white. I don't even know. But anyways, my friend did say she felt like, well, okay, maybe I can't come on, but it's still worthwhile for me to talk about this topic. I still have my perspective. I do still recommend that you go out and listen to the stories of people of color over mine. Genuinely, 100%. I feel very comfortable. Oh, excuse me, hiccup saying that. But I'm still going to share my story and you can pick and choose. I don't know. Maybe listen to this in a month. I don't know. So yeah, that's the topic. Basically, I really want to talk about experiences I've had where in hindsight, I realized I was behaving in a racist way. Okay. I got to take care of this cat. I know I'm right in the height of this hole. Here we go. Racism. But my cat is meowing and I don't know why. And I need to figure this out. Be right back. Okay, I'm back. It was probably good for me to take a break anyway. I was slurring all over the place. I mentioned in my last episode, stress induces spoonerism for me, or speech impediment. I don't have a speech impediment generally, but when I am stressed, I tend to be like, and slur a lot of things. So I apologize if it is difficult to understand me. I don't have a radio voice. I'm very aware of that. Okay, so as I was saying, I don't have experience in being treated poorly because of my skin color, but I do have experience in saying and doing things and then later realizing they were racist, unintentionally so. I don't like to think of myself as a racist person, but I've definitely done racist things. I can verifiably say that, and I'm going to share some of those experiences today. And I think it's important. I think it's important for white people to hear stories of other white people. Or you could just say people if that makes you uncomfortable for some reason. But I just think it's important for all of us to have open discussion and share experiences where we learned and where we grew. I'm going to talk about the big one first. I've mentioned before on my podcast that one of my original ideas for a podcast was to do episodes centering around things I had done and times when I was sorry for those things I had done. The biggest experience I had that motivated that idea, I'm going to talk about it today. It's something I'm embarrassed about. It's something I don't, I suddenly have a pit in my stomach and I feel uncomfortable. but it's something I've been wanting to talk about and get out of my brain for years now, years. And so I'm going to start with that one. And then as I go, we'll see what other things I think of. I've written myself some notes. We'll see what we come up with. So I'm not going to share the name, and I'm going to try my best to not share the identity of the person who I was racist towards. I have not asked for their permission, and I do not think it would be appropriate, and I'm not going to reach out to them right now. I know they're exhausted. They've shared on social media that they're tired. They've gotten plenty of messages asking if they're okay. They've had people asking to explain things to them, apologizing to them, and that's all amazing, but they're exhausted, and I know they are. They've shared that. And just like my other friend, they're tired. And so I don't feel like it's appropriate for me to call them up and say, hey, will you be on my podcast that and talk about how I was racist towards you? I really do hope that maybe one day I'll feel like there's a situation where it makes sense for me to speak to this person and apologize to them. But it also was something that happened a few years ago and I realized and stopped doing. So here it is. I'm making it sound like it's a big, long story, but I guess it's really not. I have this friend and they are Black and they live here in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I don't think that's too identifying. I'm going to go on a little tangent here and say there are Black people in Salt Lake City, Utah. I have been a part of the population of people that have made jokes about that. It's a very popular joke. You hear it from comedians when they come to visit. You hear it from Black people saying it. You hear it from white people. You hear it from everyone. It's our favorite joke. Oh, there's no Black people in Salt Lake City, Utah. Or like if I have personally, and this makes me cringe, I went to the Twilight concert a few years ago. Used to always go to those. They don't really do them anymore, especially this summer. But I went to the Twilight concert in Salt Lake City. It was in Pioneer Park. And I was talking to the Black friend that actually is the kind of center of the story I'm about to tell, or the experience I'm about to share. And then another Black friend of mine came up and I introduced them and I was all excited. And I said something along the lines of, oh my God, you're like the only two Black people in Salt Lake City. And now I'm introducing you. And I remember their faces. Like, I want to cry. This is really cringy for me, but their faces were so uncomfortable. There were Black people within sight of me when I said that, other than those two. Like, it's just, I know maybe a lot of you are thinking that's not that big of a deal, but that's the whole freaking point of all this is I and we do a lot of things that don't seem like a big freaking deal, but when you get it every day throughout your entire life, all those little things add up and it becomes a big freaking deal. And all those little things add up and they lead to police violence. Me making that joke about, oh, you're the only two Black people in Salt Lake might seem like not a big deal. But what I'm really saying is the Black people in Salt Lake don't exist. And that's fucked up. That's the point of Black Lives Matter. Black people do exist and they matter and they're worth the world. They're worth any. Thing, like as much as a white person, right? Like as much as anybody, they're humans and their lives matter and they exist and they're worth just as much as any other living creature on this planet, you know? Like they exist. So that's one of my goals right now is to work on not using that joke ever again. If I fail, that's okay. I'm just gonna work harder at not doing it again after that. But I think that joke needs to stop. I've really been thinking about it because I teach at two schools. Both of them are in the Rose Park area and a lot of my students are Black. And so more and more when I'd hear that joke, because I hear it all the time. And whenever I hear people say it now, I stop and I kind of go, oh, well, I see Black people every day. Or like people say, oh, when's the last time you saw a Black person? Or, oh, I never see Black people. I just every time feel like, well, most of my students aren't white. Most of them are Mexican or Black or just not white. They're not white. And I see them every day when I'm at work. And they exist and they matter. And I love them. And so I think that joke needs to go. Because really, I think the root of it, it sounds funny. And we're making fun of the lack of diversity in Salt Lake City. But it also kind of feels like we're saying they don't exist. And I think that's a big problem. And I think we need to stop saying that. Because they do exist. They exist and they matter. Gonna say it again. Black Lives Matter. Okay. So, anyways. This person I was saying. If you know me in real life, you know this is just how I tell stories. It's not even a story. It's like an experience. Whatever. So anyways, I've known this person for, at this point, it's probably been like 5 years. I know them through mutual friends. And they're a wonderful person. I really care about them and I'm happy that they are in my life in different ways. But anyways, every time I saw them, I mentioned something about Black people. Oh my goodness. I'm like trying to decide how to like get around and explain this and like what order to say it in. But that's the point right there. Every time I would see them, I would mention something about ethnicity or Black people or diversity. I used to teach at a school in Woods Cross, Utah. And let me tell you, do you want to find a place that actually has no Black people? It's Woods Cross. And even that's not true, by the way. See, I just made the joke that I just spent like 10 minutes saying don't do. But like, I get it. I like exaggeration. I like comedy. So we make these jokes. We exaggerate. It's hyperbole. I use a lot of hyperbole. But like when I was teaching there, I think there was like one Black student in the fifth grade when I taught that I can think of, maybe two. And they exist and they matter. And so I shouldn't say that. But I'm just saying it lacked some diversity. That's what I'm saying. And I'm saying it with some hyperbole. It lacked a lot of diversity, that school, that place. And it was a really challenging time for me because it was so evident the negative effect of that lack of diversity. A lot of all my white students, they would say such insensitive things. And we read this book about like the Civil War, and it's like they had never heard these ideas in their life. Their parents had never had a conversation with them about race or about diversity. I know at that point, you know, I was an ex-Mormon at that point, and like most of the teachers there were Mormon, and I got so much commentary. Oh my goodness. I would walk into the teacher's lounge to make coffee, and then I heard this other teacher, she walked in one day and was like, ugh, who's making coffee? It smells disgusting. And like, okay, sure, if I was cooking fish and someone walked in, it would be like no big deal. But it just, it's, I can compare it to, on a very small scale, how it must feel to be a person of color and hear white people throughout your entire life say little things and they add up, and before long you just can't take it anymore. And that's what happened to me when I taught in Woods Cross. Comments like that, or like I would hang out with the teachers in the teacher's lounge and all they would talk about was church. And so finally one day I was like, I don't really want to hear about them talking about church, because for me that was very traumatic and upsetting. So I just quietly stopped eating in there. I just ate in my classroom. I didn't say anything. I didn't say, oh, you bitches are only talking about church. I just quietly left. Not in the middle of a lunch. Just one day I stopped eating in there and I ate in my room. And then they all said, why don't you eat with us? And they noticed and they made it a big deal. And I was like, you know, you guys just talk about this stuff and I don't really want to talk about it. And then that became a big deal. And then I had a student give me a Book of Mormon, and that became a big deal. And then I had another student who saw me while I was holding a cup of coffee say, bad people drink coffee. So I don't know. That's where I was at, and I was not loving it. And I ended up leaving that school because I just was too tired to fight that fight every day. And I think that, you know, a lot of people of color are told, oh, you need to stay in this situation so you can help them learn lessons and like you can help them experience diversity. But it's like, why, just because you're Black or like not white, why is it your job to like educate the population? It's not. I mean, sometimes we have the energy, we have the power, but sometimes we have to stop and say, this isn't good for my mental health. I can't be in this situation. I can't fight this fight alone. I need to move on. And that's what I did with that school. But anyways, I was working at that school and I asked this friend to come do a presentation at my school. And I remember saying, oh, I read this article about diversity and I think these kids just need to see someone who is not white and some diversity. And I think, you know, that seemed kind of okay because it made sense with the conversation. But I think looking back, I can tell that they felt a little bit uncomfortable, that maybe I'm just putting words into their mouth, but it just seemed like they were like, cool, so you want me to be this token black person so that, like, these white kids see a black person in real life. And again, maybe that on its own doesn't seem like a big deal. But then, and then I saw him at Pioneer Park and I made that joke about him and the other person being one of the only two black people in Salt Lake. And then I saw them at a party and I made a comment about, oh, I read this other article about ethnicity and diversity in the workspace. And then I saw them at another thing and I mentioned, oh, I recently listened to this rapper. And every time I saw them for like a year, it was like a year. And I saw them like once a month, you know, I saw them often enough. Every time I saw them, I'd mention something about blackness, diversity, ethnicity, culture, just ridiculousness. Because, okay, here you might still be saying, what's the big deal? Most of you are probably like, oh my God, Laura, you're such an idiot. And yeah, you're right. I was such an idiot. Still kind of am, I think. But it'd be kind of like if every time I saw you, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. It's just, if it'd be the same, like if I had a gay friend and every time I saw them and I was like, oh, did you watch Drag Race? Oh, you're gay. Hey, I only talk to you about how you're gay. Like, yeah, being gay is a big part of who a person is. Being black is a big part of who someone is, but it's not everything about them. And they don't, I'm assuming most people don't want you to only talk about that topic with them, you know? I'm not verbalizing this very well, but my point is, every time I saw this person, I mentioned something about race or ethnicity or blackness, and I had no idea I was doing it. I was completely oblivious. And then one day, probably a year or more later, I was reading an article about white privilege because I was trying to understand that concept for myself. I definitely was that person, I'd say 5 years ago, who was saying white privilege isn't a real thing. And I was very offended by the idea because I thought, well, I'm at a disadvantage. I had all these difficulties in my childhood. My brother went to prison. I'm fat. I, whatever, the list goes on. And so I thought, well, I'm not privileged. This isn't fair. But that's not what white privilege is about. It's about, there are different kinds of privilege and that's one type. And I do not experience that. So anyway, yeah, I actually just paused that if you can't tell. Dennis came home and he was talking to the cats and it was pretty loud. So took a little break, another little one there. But I was just explaining, you know, well, I don't have to repeat it. White privilege, I have it. So, I mean, that's not even that big of a story. And I'm sure a lot of you are like, that's not a big deal. But like, I think that a tiny little story like that, where I kind of stepped back and went, wow, every time I see this black person, I feel like I have to talk about blackness. Like that's a racial, it's a microaggression, right? Like I'm acting differently towards this person because of the color of their skin. And really that's it. That's the point. And it's not that we need to be colorblind. That's the opposite. We need to have conversations about race and all of these things. But I don't think that my entire relationship with a person that is black needs to be about that. That they are black. That can be part of it. We can have conversations about it, but that's just one piece of it. You know, that person is a lot of things and black is just one of them. And our friendship should be about a lot more than just that one piece. And so, yeah, I realized I was doing that because I was educating myself. I think that's a really important part of that situation is I was reading up about white privilege. I was trying to understand the ways that I was being racist in my own life, the privilege that I had, the things that I was doing that might be hurting my friends who are not white. And because of that research and that reading and that personal development, I kind of had an aha moment, not a ho moment. I had a ho moment. I think I should say that now. And I just realized like, wow, every time I interact with this person, I talk about this thing. That's a big deal. And to me, it was a really big deal because it hurt me. It hurt me to know that this person thinks of me as, oh, here's Laura. Every time she sees me, she's going to mention something about me being black or ethnicity or diversity or the hood or whatever I was talking about. I don't even know, but I know I was doing it. I never went up to them and apologized because it didn't make sense in the situations where I saw him. To be like, hey, can we have a heart-to-heart about how I was racist towards you? And I had to process it, and it took me a long time to process it. And then by the time I did process it, I wasn't really seeing him, and we weren't really in situations where I would bring that up. And then the Black Lives Matter movement has really picked up this summer, and now especially I'm like, now's not the time for me to say, remember when I did this 2 years ago, 3 years ago? I stopped. Have you noticed? No. I think it's up to me to stop doing that thing, which I have, and to be more mindful that I don't need to bring up that every time I see that person. And I have. I've changed. I think, as far as I've observed, whenever I see them, I don't feel the need to talk. It's not even, I'm not even sitting there going, don't talk about it. Don't mention it. Don't mention it. I just went, oh, and stopped doing it. And I think a lot of the racist behavior we have is going to be like that. We're going to realize we are doing something. We're going to need to change it, and we're going to need to stop it. And then we move on and we have conversations about it, and we learn and we grow. And a lot of that's going to come from the awareness that we're going to get if we educate ourselves. So, like, a lot of people right now are talking about systematic racism in the police system and how we are taught in our culture, in the white culture especially, that policemen are to be, or police people, right? Police officers are meant to be revered. They're public heroes. They keep us safe. They do all these things. And that's not the reality for the Black community. They don't experience those things. And it's so ingrained in us that it's like, we see cop, we see safety. We see cop, we see order. All these things that we've been told since we were little kids that cops mean. And sometimes cops maybe do mean that, but they're not meant to mean as much as they do. And they're not meant to do as much as they do. And we need to retrain our brains and educate ourselves so that we have a more correct narrative in our heads and a more correct reality. So that situation with that friend, where I realized every time I saw them, I'd be like, oh, hey, let's talk about Tupac. I don't know. That was a made up example, but I'm just saying, I realized it. I stopped it. And it was because I was educating myself. I think another situation I could compare to educating oneself about race inequality would be my transformation from other things. Let's see. I grew up in a very conservative home. They might not think that, but I did. They being my family, my parents, they might not think we were very conservative compared to their parents or the experiences or things they saw, but it was very conservative. And one of the things that I grew up with was that gay people, the queer community, that they A, aren't real, or B, choose that, or C, shouldn't be allowed to get married, or D, you know, the list goes on. I think you can fill in the blanks there. And that's what I was raised with, so that's what I believed. In my teenage years, I really thought what I was told. I mean, how am I supposed to be a kid? I just wasn't one of those cool kids who magically went, nah, my parents are wrong. It took me a long time to figure that out. And until well into my mid-20s, even though at that point I did have gay friends, I didn't think they should be allowed to get married. I was following the dictates of my church and the announcements and the rules and things they had told me. The Mormon church released something, let's see, I don't know what year it was. It's probably around, let's see, I left the Mormon church when I was about 27, and I feel like this conversation came up about a year or two before that. I don't want to do the math right now, but right now I'm 34, so let's see, I'm going to do the math. Here we go. 34 minus 27 is 7, minus 2 more is 8 or 9, so around 2010, let's go with that. The Mormon Church, the LDS Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, released a statement on their official website that compared homosexual people and members of the queer community to mentally disabled people and members of the differently abled community, and said in both instances, most of them will not be able to marry in this life. Okay? And maybe I'm not getting the wording perfect here. You can go Google it and be angry all you want. But that was the main message. It was like, oh, well, it's like my nonverbal autistic brother. He's like a gay person. They just won't be able to get married in this lifetime. In the next life, God will cure them of their homosexuality, their queerness, their otherness. God will cure them of that, and then they'll be able to get married and have kids and create worlds, right? Like, that was the rhetoric. And I remember when I heard that message, I thought, what a great analogy. I thought, what a great way to describe it. It's not that they're bad people. It's just that their brains are disabled and they just don't get to have that blessing this life. They just have to wait. And I was super into it. I thought it seemed like a really compassionate, wonderful idea. And I am cringing even saying that. But I think it's important for everyone to start admitting times in our lives when we were wrong. And then how we changed and why we changed. It matters. It freaking matters. Because I think right now everybody's looking at Republicans versus Democrats, liberals, conservatives. And it's like, no, they could possibly never see my point of view. They could never change. They could never grow. If you believe this, you always believe this. Hillary Clinton didn't vote for gays in the 90s, so she's a hypocrite. No, that's not how it works. We're human beings. We change. We grow. We have emotions. We have thoughts. And we change and we grow. And this is just one example of that. I do not think those things anymore. I think that's very harmful rhetoric. I think it's very offensive to say that a queer person has a broken brain or that a disabled person does. I mean, obviously too, but I'm just saying like that's offensive also, I'm saying. It's just a really inappropriate comparison, I would say. And I think it's really horrible to say, oh, well, you're gay. You just don't get to be happy during this lifetime. God will fix you in the next one and then you can be happy, but you'll be happy with someone of the opposite sex. It's offensive on like 18 million levels, personally, I would say at this point. But anyways, I really thought this, and my friend Shelley was visiting me in Ogden, Utah, and we were sitting in my living room and we had a discussion. I shared it and thought, what a great idea. And Shelley was so compassionate. She didn't say, oh, you idiot, I'm going to cancel you. She didn't say, oh, you're wrong, I hate you. She didn't yell at me. She just quietly listened to me. She let me explain all of my feelings. She didn't interrupt me. And then she shared her feelings and why she disagreed. And then when I would come back and say, but what about this? She would refute it. And she would say, well, let's compare it to this. And she gave me comparisons and examples and education. She educated me. And by the end of that conversation, I changed my mind. It was several hours long, I think. I don't know. I can't remember. But I went from thinking, yeah, the queer community will just have to wait until the next life when God will fix them, to a complete 180, 360, I don't know, I'm not good at math, a completely different viewpoint where I realized, like, that's not fair. That's wrong. That queer people are born that way. Hello, Lady Gaga. And that they deserve happiness in this life as we all do. And that their brains work perfectly fine. Just as well as any of us straight people out here, right? Like, my mind was changed. And it was through a compassionate discussion where my friend shared her points of view with me. And I do think it's also important that I trusted and loved my friend Shelley, and I still do. One of my bridesmaids. And I listened to her, if my memory serves me. Man, I really ought to get Shelley on here and ask her perspective of that conversation. But from my perspective, I remember listening to her and refuting her points, but then she would refute mine back. And I don't mean refute like battle. That word doesn't mean we fought. It just meant, well, here, no here. Well, what about this? No this. We went back and forth, and she, with compassion, emotion, sympathy, empathy, all those wonderful things, convinced me of a different reality. And that conversation, along with many other conversations with many other people and many other experiences, led me to really changing my thinking. Yes, it might have been a small part of what led me to leaving the Mormon church, but it was a tiny piece. It was more importantly a part of what led me to realize that I was viewing the queer community as other and as less human and as less important, and a lot of other horrible, harmful things that lead to suicide in our Mormon community from our queer young people. It's a big thing. I'd call it an epidemic. I feel comfortable using that word. I see it in my classrooms. I hear it from teachers. In Provo, there was a substitute teacher who said that like gay marriage was wrong and was like going off about it. And one of the students in the classroom was like, well, my dad's and like was talking about their queer parents, and this like substitute teacher like told them they were wrong and bad and that those parents didn't count and they weren't real and all these other horrible things. And thank God she got fired. But I'm just saying, just like with race issues, like we tend to view the world as this like, well, that's not how it is now. That's how it used to be. But that's not true. We are in a world that is still racist, that is still homophobic, that is still hurting people who are not white and straight. And that's just the truth of it. I also grew up in a home that was very Republican. It still is. Well, my mother is very Republican. My father has passed away. My sister and I are the very liberal ones, right? We're the black sheep, I suppose, at this point. I believe my older brother is quite conservative. And my other older brother is definitely very conservative. Loves that Fox News. But yeah, when I was younger, I was like, I am a Republican. I remember being in my high school debate class. My teacher was very liberal. And I used to say the phrase all the time, that's so gay. It was a very St. George phrase. It was a very everywhere phrase for a time in the early 2000s. I'm sure the young people right now are like, what? Why would you say that? Another popular phrase in St. George, Utah when I was in high school was, that's so Jewish. So like, instead of saying that's so stupid, I would say that's so Jewish. I actually never said the Jewish one. I remember arriving on the scene in St. George and hearing that from Eureka, California. And I heard these white girls saying that's so Jewish. And I was just like, what? And I was like, what'd you say? And they were like, that's so Jewish. And I was like, what does that even mean? And they were like, it's just like slang for like, that's lame. And it was like, what? But the crazy thing is, it was so clear to me why that's so Jewish was offensive, but I didn't see the same for that's so gay. I would go around saying that's so gay, and my debate teacher was like, that's really offensive. You're not allowed to say it in my classroom. And so one day I was like, well, will you debate it with me? And she was like, yeah. And so I said, well, when I say that's so gay, I don't mean gay people. It's just a phrase. And she's like, yeah, but there are gay people and they hear that and you hurt them. I was like, yeah, but gay doesn't even mean that anymore. It means like happy. So I'm like, that's so happy. And she's like, no, that's not how the English language works. Words have meaning and it changes over time. And then you have to kind of like know that the words you're using have a different meaning than what you think they mean. I explained that wrong. She explained it so well. But I think that idea that I just poorly tried to explain is very true. Like, it's just like all lives matter. People get to go on all day long saying all lives matter. But at this point, I think everyone should be pretty aware of the fact that that doesn't mean what it sounds like it means. It sounds like it means all lives matter. Frickin' duh. All lives do matter. But at this point, pop culture, society has changed that meaning of that phrase. Now it means, I don't agree with Black Lives Matter. It's kind of like coded language for, this is a load of crock. There's nothing wrong. America's not racist. I don't agree with Black Lives Matter. I'm conservative. I'm Republican. I'm with Trump. It means a lot of other things besides what it sounds like it means. And that's the same as I thought, oh, well, that's so gay. It doesn't mean what I think it means. And it's like, no, if a gay person hears you say that, then it's like you're saying being gay is stupid or dumb or whatever. And you're using a description of that person as a description of something bad. Its meaning is different than what you think it means. I don't know. I'm not very eloquent. I hope that made sense. But I went from that person who was very Republican. I went to the Republican convention in Salt Lake City, Utah with my mom. She was a delegate and my sister. And I think that was a big turning point for us. My sister and I went to that convention and we heard the words of these Republicans. We met Mike Lee. He's friends with my uncle. We heard what they said and we did not like it. We both, I think, had a very like creep factor reaction to that, and it clicked for us. We were just like, this isn't for us. I'm not trying to harsh on all the Republicans out there, but it was just me and my sister. I think we were both just like, nope, not for us. We don't fit here. Now, I would say fast forward to now, I think that a lot of things that happen from the Democratic Party, I also feel like, ooh, nope, I don't fit here. I don't like that. I definitely hear a lot of things from the Republican Party that I'm like, ooh, nope, I don't fit here. I don't agree with that. I'd rather be unaffiliated, but in Utah, you do have to affiliate yourself to vote in primaries. So I have registered as a Democrat. I'm kind of thinking about registering as a Republican too, so I can vote for in that election. But it's just, I'm trying to paint a picture here. I was a different person. I was a different human. And I was just kind of going with what I had heard from my teachers, my parents, my friends, my community. It was all, this is the right way. And it made sense. I grew up in a community with mostly white people. One of my best friends is Japanese growing up. But other than that, like, my friends were all white. And I lived in a community that was predominantly white. And then I moved to St. George, Utah. Hello, that's a lot of white people. There are a lot of Polynesian people there. And I heard a lot of racial slurs directed towards them from people at my high school. And again, I move into St. George, Utah, and I hear those things like, that's so Jewish. Or they would call Polynesian people brownies. And I was really bothered by that. Eureka, California is a very liberal community. So even though my family was very conservative, I was hearing a lot of really good messages from my teachers and my friends at school. And then I moved to St. George, Utah, and I started hearing a lot of opposite messages. I had a history teacher who would argue a very biased history in favor of the Republican Party. And I didn't know any better. I was just kind of like, yep, this is what people in authority are telling me. This is what my parents are telling me. This is what the news we're listening to is telling me, my church leaders and my friends. And then, you know, fast forward, I've gone to college. One of my best friends is not white. And then I go to graduate school and my friend group has a little bit of diversity, but not really. It's mostly just white Mormons in singles ward. And then I start to have conversations like that one with Shelley, where I realize that I am not viewing certain groups of people as fully human on the level that I am. I'm viewing them as other, as something less than me. It's okay for me, it seemed, to say that's so gay, because in my head, being gay wasn't being a human. It was something else. On a much more horrific level, I would say it's kind of the same idea as slave owners. They didn't see their slaves as people. They saw them as cattle, as sheep, as tools. So in their mind, they weren't being bad people because they weren't treating people poorly. They were just treating cattle like they should treat cattle. And that's horrific. But on a small scale, that's what I was doing. When I said that's so gay, that's what I was doing. I was saying gay people aren't people on the same level that I am, so it's okay for me to speak about them in that way and their sexuality in that way. And when you use racist terms, or when I make jokes about there being no black people in Salt Lake, that's like me saying my list of friends who aren't white don't exist. And it's wrong, and I need to work on that. And I think that's what this really is all about. It's not Republican versus Democrat. It's not black on black crime versus white crime. It's not police being good or bad versus this or that. It's about a wake-up call. We are a racist society, and we need to look at ourselves and our behaviors, and we need to learn, and we need to grow. And it's a loud awakening. Oh, I'm even thinking about some of my, like, social media interactions. I had one where my cousin commented on something. I was saying Black Lives Matter, and he went on there and said, white privilege doesn't exist. That's all he said. He was clearly trying to kind of bait me. And he didn't explain himself. He just said it. And so then I got in there and was like, hey, dude, don't add me, because he added me like that day and then immediately went on there and said that. Also, he has two Facebook accounts, and one of them is like him and his kids. And then this one was like a picture that said truth, and it didn't have him in it. It was like he made a troll account. That's how it felt. And then he added me, and I never see him post, so I didn't even think of the fact that he had two accounts. And then he gets on there and makes a political comment right away. He's a troll. Like, any of the comments I'm going to make about race and things that we're talking about right now and political things are with my account with my name, right? Like, they have a picture of my face. I think it's really cowardly to create an account that's faceless and that you're going to use to go make asinine comments on your family members' posts. That's ridiculous. So he already had me there making me angry. And then at one point, his response, he brought in that I needed to find Jesus. And he didn't say that. He said I needed to find the path of happiness. And I knew what he meant, because just like all this racial stuff, there's a lot of coded language about being an ex-Mormon. You know, a lot of my LDS friends will say things that they think are very well intended because the church and their community are saying they are well intended because it's missionary work, right? But it's coded language. It's saying, Laura, you're doing the wrong thing. You're on the wrong path. Satan's got you. You're tricked. You're fooled. You're stupid. You need to get back on this path because there's only one path and one answer. That's what your coded language is saying to me. So when he jumps on there and has a response to me saying white privilege does exist, he says, you need to find Jesus? Oh, no. No, you didn't. No. This is where I got angry. And I reacted by chewing him out. I called him a lot of foul words. I said he was a coward. I made personal attacks about his life. I freaked out. And I'm not necessarily proud of that, but I also, wait, kind of am. I loved speaking up for myself. I loved saying the truth about this person, about this coward. I loved ripping them apart. And, you know, it got me thinking. I'm like, that's how the riots are. You know, I think we all know, and if you don't know, you should know, that most of the violence and rioting and looting are coming from white people, by the way. A lot of undercover white supremacists, but also a lot of just white people taking advantage of the situation. But that aside, let's just, like, even if it was a bunch of black people being violent, I kind of get it. You know, I try to be chill in my conversations and talk things out, but I've had several situations in the last few days where I've lost my temper and said things that were rude to other people. And again, on a very tiny scale, that's kind of the same thing as rioting violently, right? You get so tired of trying to reason and talk it out and share your feelings, and you get so tired of being berated. I've been berated for, you know, 7 years since I've left the church, constantly given these negative messages about what that means. And I just broke, you know? It wasn't because one time, once in my life, someone said something about me leaving the Mormon church and I just went, oh, you're a horrible person. No. All of that anger, all of me chewing him out, all of that came from this place of, I've been beat up for 7 years over this. I am given all this code and language from family members and from coworkers and from people who are still Mormons about how I should be a Mormon, but they think they're being real sneaky about it. Like, ooh, if I just say this sneaky stuff, one day the spirit will convince her. It just built up and I broke. And so I would compare that to like how a black person must feel. They've spent an entire lifetime hearing these messages, coded and uncoded, intentional and unintentional. Unintentional. Whew, wrong word there. They've heard it their whole lives, and it's just chipping away, chipping away, chipping away, chipping away. And eventually they're breaking. And they're saying, we tried to kneel. We tried to do peaceful protest. We tried to use politics. We tried to get into the government. Like, we tried to do it the way you told us to do it. And that has not worked. And people are still not listening. So now it's time to scream. Now it's time to call my cousin Kyle a cuck. Yeah, now is the time to be angry. I get it. I don't know. I don't hold it against them. I know I'm not perfect. But I've tried to be nice about saying, don't tell me I should join the Mormon church for a long time. And I'm finally getting to the point where I'm like, no, fuck you. If you're still trying to bring me back to the fold because you're so convinced that I'm miserable and lost, I just don't even want to hear it anymore. I'm ready to shout at you and to tell you to F off. And I think on a bigger scale, that's how black people feel right now. They're tired of it. And they're just like, no, I tried to do it the right way. Here we go. I tried to tell you kindly to respect me and my wishes, and you aren't listening. So here we go. You know what? Change is happening and it's working. So maybe once all of you people who don't agree with this start responding to peaceful discussion and peaceful dialogue and peaceful protest, then we won't have to be angry and yell at you and call you names and even possibly have violent protesting, right? I don't know. I think that makes perfect sense. Another thing I'm seeing that's happening is a lot of people are picking ideology and philosophy and kind of mechanics of argumentation over human life. I think that really matters. I hear it a lot in my family. If you stop and ask somebody why they think that there should be certain laws and programs that hurt Black people, if you listen to them, like, they got some logic. And you're like, oh, okay, got some logic. You know what else uses some logic? Eugenics. Eugenics seems like a pretty sweet idea, right? You're like, oh, yeah. We'll just weed out all the bad things and then have all the good things stay behind. But guess what eugenics led to? It led to, let's sterilize Black people. Let's sterilize gay people. Let's sterilize anyone who isn't white, straight, and perfect like me. What? Are you freaking kidding me? That's terrible. So, my point is, I understand that sometimes we can talk ourselves into something being really logical and making a lot of sense, but if you remove that human piece and forget that people aren't philosophies, people aren't logical arguments, people aren't numbers, that there's something more to it, like, you've got to have that piece of humanity. You've just got to. You can philosophize all day long, but there's going to be someone out there who can out-philosophize you. And at the end of the day, I'm just going to pick the one that has more humanity. We've got to take care of our communities and our people. We've got to take care of our children and teach them. We've got to create a world where people have the same advantages as each other. That I'm not even saying it right, but I'm just... We've got to remember human beings in all of this. And that's really what it is about. And you can argue and say that's just emotions talking. But you're right. Emotions are a survival tool. They're in us to help us regulate and to plan and to live and to exist. They make us human. They make us different from slugs. If you want to just go around with some perfect, logical, survival, base level shit, go be a slug. I don't know. But I'm going to use my human emotions and reason. And I'm going to be a human. And I'm going to be a little bit better than a slug. I don't know. Oof. Like, I want to live in a society where I pay taxes and those taxes help my community. I want government spending for, like, the military to be diverted to education, to welfare situations, to programs that help people not need to be on welfare, to job opportunities, to supporting police officers so they aren't in the situation where they're killing people and overworked and run poorly. Like, we've got to put the money in different places that matter. And I'm no expert on this. Don't listen to me for this. Go somewhere else. Google it. I don't know. I'm just saying. We've got to rethink this. You got to have a Shelley conversation. Stop. Think about what you are saying. Dump some human in that conversation and really rethink your own behavior and your own actions. And can I just say something? I think it's really, really, really funny. And my cousin Kyle, the one who I called all those terrible things, and I do not care about saying his name right now, he also, in these random arguments, brought up, like, all of the, like, kind of welfare programs that we have in our country. And he was like, that's what ruined our country, which was totally off topic and made no sense in the conversation. I genuinely think he's been huffing some paint or something. I don't even know. I just think it's funny when you hear super Mormon people argue against taxes that, like, benefit the community. So, like, in the Mormon church, you pay 10% tithing and then they take that tithing money, put a little bit into their stockpile of $100 million that they're saving for a rainy day and not helping anyone with. Okay, check. But then they take a lot of that tithe money. Okay, they run the church. They make the buildings. They do all the things with the church. Okay, check. Then they take, I don't know what percentage of your tithe money, And they put it into their welfare center and their welfare system. And it helps people who are members of the church community when they are down on their luck, when they are unemployed. I've been helped by Mormon welfare. I've had help paying my bills, getting my car repaired. I know my mom has been helped by the church welfare lots of times, and she voted for Trump. So I just, do you like not see the disconnect here? So you think it's a bad idea to tax the American public and then use those taxes for welfare systems within our government and to help people out when they are down on their luck or when they need support, but you're perfectly okay with it within your church? It's the same freaking thing. The only difference is right now our government is run by people who are like, let's take those taxes and instead of helping the American people, let's build another nuclear bomb. Because I don't know, like thousands of them aren't enough. Even though a couple of them would destroy the planet, we need thousands of them. We need thousands and thousands of nuclear weapons. Oh, Google it. It's real. That's my phrase right now. Google it. Because I'm just freaking tired. It's not my job on my podcast. I want to talk. I want to share. But like, there's so many things. I'm not going to sit here and give you facts and figures. Google it. Google exists. It freaking exists. Don't go to Fox News and search it on their webpage. Go to Google. Right? Google's pretty neutral, isn't it? I don't know. I just think that's something to consider. If you are all for paying tithe and having that help out the people in your church, but you don't want the government taxes to go to things besides government, like military and policing, then you got something wrong in your brain. You need to rethink what you're doing. Okay. I have some other things I want to talk about, but I think I'm just done. You don't need to hear more than an hour of just me and my voice talking about random things that aren't making sense and are all disconnected. My brain is a bowl of freaking scrambled eggs right now. It's all over the place and I cannot make sense of anything and I do not have a producer and it's just me talking right now. So I'm going to end on this. Our country needs diversity. Our world needs diversity. I want my schools to have diversity. I want my future children to experience diversity. It makes the world freaking beautiful. Watch a Queer Eye episode. Are you kidding me? That's the American dream. I don't want to just eat cheeseburgers and chicken nuggets and hang out with white people. I want food from all over the world. I want people from all over the world. I want accents from all over the world and languages and music and arts and cultures. We have to have more than one perspective. I still want to hear conservative voices. I still want to hear liberal voices. I want it all because that's the best possible life situation, world, country possible. We've got to have that diversity. We've got to take a moment and listen to voices different than ours. And right now, that voice that we need to listen to is the voice of Black people. Turn off this podcast. It's about to be over. Now go listen to that NPR podcast I recommended earlier, Throughline, about police in America. Go find some voices that are different than your own, that are different than the normal sound, whatever it's called, you know, when you're just echo chamber, that's it. Go find some different voices and listen to them. And maybe the whole time you're going to be sitting there scoffing and saying this is wrong, but at least you'll listen to something different. Okay? That's just all. That's my recommendation. I don't know. That's it. Here we go. Lots of pauses. This is a weird one. Maybe I'll just do it and skip on, and then hopefully I'll be able to have a conversation with another human being that will make more sense than this. Because this has been one hot mess. I'm Laura. This is Kitsch Kat Chat. And that's all I've got for you.